Welcome to The Lorraine Murphy Show. I'm an entrepreneur on my second business, a mentor, an author, wife to a fellow entrepreneur, and mother to a magical little girl. On my podcast, I explore topics that fascinate me that will help you unlock ideas to rise even higher in your life. Myself and my special guests will be talking entrepreneurship and how to build better businesses, organization and figuring out how to get more shit done quicker and smarter, staying in touch with our soul, and how to blend business babies with real babies. Let's jump in to this week's episode. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Lorraine Murphy Show. It is, as always, wonderful to have you joining me. So this week I am focusing on an area that many of my mentees seek my guidance on, which is how they can build their profile. My background is in PR, however, as I share in this episode, it is a very different experience talking about yourself instead of talking about a client's product or service. As a result, I found that some of the biggest lessons in this area have come from overcoming my own mindset blocks. My intent with this episode is to share with you the most powerful levers I've used to build my profile, as well as easing some of that fear and uncertainty that is part and parcel of putting yourself out there. In it, I share why awards were such a pivotal part of me starting to build a profile, my experience as an awards judge and what I look for when I'm judging entries, my top tip to winning awards, and this one always gets a giggle when I share it when I'm speaking in person, why having an opinion can help you grow your profile, the number one hack I have for gauging what content to focus on next, how I got over my horrible fear of public speaking, the weird and wonderful tricks I use to help me speak with confidence, the snowball concept and why it is so important on our mission to build our profiles, why I would rather have 100 followers than 100,000 followers, and also some examples of some thoughtful ways that I nurture my community and that you might want to have a think about nurturing your community with as well. So let's jump right in to this week's episode. So what I want to do in this episode is to share some things that have helped me personally when it comes to growing my profile. And it'll be a mix of the practical, like this is what I did. These are the areas that I suggest you focus on if you're seeking to grow your profile right now. But also some of the mindset challenges, because I said, I do believe that for me anyway, it's been the mindset stuff has been hardest of all to overcome when it comes to this particular area. So I'll be, giving you some ideas around that as well. And I was writing my notes as I was preparing this episode. And I was saying, I think mindset is 90% of it when it comes to building our profiles and confidence, getting over that self-doubt, all that kind of thing. Now, I also, team, want to be really, really, really clear in this episode that I am not saying that I have the most amazing, biggest, most powerful profile. Not for even half a second am I saying that. However, I do have a super engaged community. I've gotten to write, as I said, 3 books. I get to have this podcast, which I think as I'm recording this is on about 75,000 downloads now in just over a year. I feel like I've built a profile to kind of X point, and it's a profile that's serving me incredibly well in my business. I would not be running the business that I'm running now without the concerted effort that I have spent building my profile. And also I wouldn't have had anywhere near the success that I had in my first business. So we were turning over multi-millions of dollars a year in that first business. And I wouldn't have been able to do that without the effort on building my profile. So I'm going to jump straight in. This isn't necessarily step-by-step, but what I've tried to do is just pull out, I guess, kind of pillars, like key pillars around depending on where you're sitting, if maybe you've got a burgeoning profile right now, or it's something that you feel like you really want to focus on because you're about to start your first business, or you've got an established business and you are keen to really take it to the next level and you feel like putting yourself out there more would be a key step in doing that. Or it might be that you have no intentions of having a business at all, but you know that by building your profile, you will actually get more leverage in the roles that you go for and that you're doing. I guess almost that entrepreneurial nature to that one. So I'm going to dive straight in. And one of the things that I would say to you, if you are considering, as I said, building your profile, or it's on your radar, or you want to amplify the profile that you already have, is to know why you're doing it. And I really do believe this is not about getting famous for the sake of getting famous. There are much easier and cheaper ways to do that than some of the advice that I'm going to take you through today. For example, buying followers. Kim Kardashian, the reason she initially got famous was her sex tape. So I'm not saying everyone should go out there and do sex tapes, but I am saying if you want to get famous, there's easier ways to get famous than what I'm about to take you through in this episode. So it's not about getting famous. It's more about knowing why you're doing it. And for me, the reason I started to focus on my profile was that I just started my first business, The Remarkables Group, in my spare bedroom in May 2012. And I had $0 allocated to sales. To marketing or advertising. There was no money in my budget for that. And I took a leaf out of the amazing Richard Branson's book, who always said that PR was the cheapest publicity, the cheapest marketing that he had. And the fact that he was prepared to put himself out there and do all the crazy stunts that Richard Branson does meant that he actually got so much free publicity for Virgin that a lot of other brands, they couldn't even dream of getting the kind of publicity that he was getting for the business and businesses. So I think the first thing is just to know why you're doing it. And as I said, I really saw back when I started my first business, it was the whole idea of leveraging myself as an asset. And my reason for doing that was, of course, to get some sales in the door for a brand new business. Also to build my credibility, because what I was doing, that the first business that I had was a talent agency for social influencers. So it's that whole idea of there was no one had done anything like that in Australia before. It was completely first to market. I had never had a business before. I had zero credibility when it came to running a business. So for me, building my profile was a way of also building my credibility as an entrepreneur, as an expert in influencer marketing and so on. And also about getting that traction for the business, getting the rubber to hit the road as quickly as possible, I think was also a really, really big one for me. So you might be listening to this. You might already have, as I said, a profile that you're building. You may be keen to grow your business. You may be looking to develop your career. You may have a book that's burning a hole in your soul that you're just like, I just want to get this. I know that in order for me to make this book happen or this podcast happen or this event idea happen, that by me wanting to do that, it would really help me a lot if I could actually have myself out there and more visible out in the world and with the relevant people that I want to be seen by. So there's going to be lots of different reasons for why you will want to build your profile. As you're listening here, you either will have no reason right now, which is perfectly fine, or you'll have a very clear call to, okay, that's why I want to do this. So first of all is to know why you're doing it. Now, the biggest thing of all that has helped me when it came to, I mean, they've all helped in different ways, but I think the area that has gotten me the most early momentum when it came to building my profile is awards and entering. So being a finalist for and winning awards. They have hands down over the years been the biggest game changer for me. And I'm just reflecting on this as I'm recording this episode. So I'm sitting in my home office recording this episode, and in the bookshelf next to me, I've got, how many can I see? I can see 8 trophies for awards that I won between, God, what would it be, 2013 and 2000, I'm trying to see the latest one, maybe 2017. And with those awards, I actually found it interesting that I don't feel the need to enter awards right now, when I haven't entered awards for the last kind of 3 years. And I think for me, the awards were really critical in just establishing myself, like almost like to put my markers down and say, okay, this is who I am, and to get that momentum. So for me, in the early days, the biggest benefit that I've had was from awards. And I guess the importance of awards, when I just think about it as I'm recording, has kind of faded a little bit over the years, because I feel like I did get that momentum quite early on with that whole space. So the reason I loved the awards is goes back to that idea of credibility again. So it meant that I was very, very diligent about when I won a new award, putting it in the signature of my email. If you're trying to get that meeting, brand new business, brand new concept, you're trying to get a meeting with someone who's just doesn't know me from Adam or Eve, it's that whole idea of, okay, well, with the award, it just gives you that bit more credibility. It marks you out as being, even if you're just a finalist, it just marks you out as being a little bit special, or there's something I like to think about being remarkable there. So the big thing I think awards deliver is 100% that credibility, because when you are a finalist for an award, or you even better, win an award, it just gives as annoying as this is and frustrating as is, people kind of want to put you in some kind of a box and some kind of a pigeonhole. So when you're there as an awards finalist or an awards winner, straight away it almost fast tracks you to, oh, well, they're associated with these awards, therefore they must be really successful or have really great advice or be really intelligent or whatever it might be. So awards really do confer a lot of credibility. And the other thing I mentioned as well is sales. So I found that when I started to win some awards and be finalist for some awards, it really started to get the sales machine, the new biz machine going a lot quicker in our business because I was just more visible. I was out there more. People started to know who I was. I'm not saying everyone knew who I was, but the people I needed to know who I was knew who I was. So it's that whole idea of, yeah, that credibility, that visibility, and also just that extra oomph for whatever activities it is. For me right then, it was just getting sales in the door for a brand new business. So the very first award, so I just need to be really clear, the only award that I had won before this was for history in my final year of high school. So I wasn't someone that was, yeah, entering awards or had been put forward for awards by my employers in the past. And the first awards I actually entered was an awards. It was the 30 under 30 awards. It was a marketing title awards. And I had just started my first business, The Remarkables Group. And I entered this 30 under 30 because I'd started the business at 29. Which I have to say, quick aside, was a very, very good decision to make in terms of timings because it just meant I had an entire year of the 30 under 30, the young guns, the dynamic up and comers, all that kind of stuff. I had the pick of the bunch of all that stuff, which was just brilliant for that year. And then I got to 30 and then that kind of wasn't as available to me. So I wasn't super busy in the early days of my first business, given that I had absolutely zero clients. And I saw that this marketing title had brought out announced the 30 under 30 awards. And I looked into it. It was reasonably straightforward to enter. And I entered it. It wasn't for entrepreneurs. It was for marketing professionals more broadly. But I entered the awards saying essentially that I entered specialist category. And I entered it with the kind of the story that I had was that I believe so passionate influencer marketing and digital advertising and marketing and content marketing that I've actually gone and started my first business. So I talked about my experience in my career until that point, and then the fact that I believed in this space so passionately that I had gone and started this business, which was The Remarkables Group. So I put together my awards entry. As part of that awards entry, I had to ask two people for references. So I asked my former chairman from my previous business and I think one of my clients from memory, it's a while ago now. And I put my entry in, and to be honest, it was just a good exercise for me in learning how these awards things work. I didn't for even half a heartbeat think that I might actually win one of the awards. And then it was announced that there was 60 finalists. So they picked 60 finalists for all of the categories. I think there was 10, I think there was 10 finalists in my category. And it was just fascinating, you know, that whole idea of that you don't need to be the biggest and the best in order to be finalists in these awards, because the other people, every single person other than me in my category was from really big global agencies, like really, yeah, pretty successful agencies. So it was just a real eye-opener for me that the judges aren't necessarily always looking for the biggest company that makes the most profit. They're actually looking for quite a broad mix of finalists and obviously winners in the end. So I got announced as a finalist when I just thought that was the most amazing thing in the world. I didn't bother bringing anyone with me because I didn't, for, as I said, even half a heartbeat thought that I might actually win the award. And I went along and I saw it as a bit of an opportunity to do some kind of networking. I chatted to a few of my ex-colleagues and then they started announcing the awards, and I was announced as a winner in the specialist category. So only five of us were chosen as winners in the specialist category. And I've still got the photo. I must dig it up actually and share it on social as part of this episode this week. But I'm just like the most stunned, happiest, excited person you've ever seen, because I just could not fathom the fact that I had won this award. It was such a cool experience. And I think from that experience then, it made me realize that, oh, I do have something, like there's something compelling in my story. And biggest thing of all is that I'm worthy of winning an award. Like, this is insane that I can do this. And I really then started to get a lot more proactive with awards, putting myself forward for every award that I could possibly find. With the result, I've never actually done a full tally, but I reckon I've won about at least 8 to 10 awards, and then me finalists for probably, 10, 15 beyond that as well. So I did get very, very proactive about it. And what I've really learned from awards and also seeing friends of mine go through the process as well is that obviously it's lovely to win and you love to win and that's always super special. But even just being in the process of entering an award helps you so much. And the first thing that I feel like it helps with is reflection, because if it's a good awards and a pretty rigorous and clever awards process, they will ask you some pretty leading questions about your business and yourself, or your career if you don't have your own business. And I've always really enjoyed awards entries for that reason, because it just gives you that, yeah, just that chance to reflect. And you don't often get to do that, whether you are in a career or you've got your own business. You don't necessarily, yeah, get the chance to reflect on what's working, what's not working, what challenges you've overcome and that kind of thing. So I think that's one reason that I really do love the awards process, that kind of forced reflection that the entries create for you. And the other reason I love awards, beyond obviously the winning and the profile building element of them, it's the networking side of it. So whether that's reaching out to a past colleague or a past boss for a reference or a client, it just gives you a chance to get back in touch with them. It just means you're engaging. You know, you're out there, particularly in these days that we're experiencing right now, where we're still in the midst of this COVID situation. And I just find it's any way that you can create opportunities to connect with other people, I think it's a really, really good thing. And the other thing as well is that it's about, I like to think about it in terms of positioning. So let's say you enter, you get the benefit of the reflection, the networking, whether it's with the awards organizers or if it's people that you're asking for references from. But then you get announced as a finalist, for example. And then I find, yeah, it really helps your positioning because, again, as I said, people are just, as humans, it's like our brains are just constantly filing. Like, what does this mean? What does this mean for this person? What do I now associate this person with? So I think when we are a finalist for awards, it immediately puts you in a certain pigeonhole in the eyes of other people. And I'm not saying it's all about other people. Of course, it goes without saying the biggest win from winning an award or even being finalist for an award is the win of the team. You know, the fact that you did it together if you've got a team. And also just that sense of personal fulfillment, because as I'm hoping is coming through in this season and has come through for you when you follow other entrepreneurs, is that, you know, business is not easy. It's one of the most challenging, I believe it's the most challenging endeavor I've personally ever undertaken, because it's constant, but it's ongoing, you know, which is you master one lesson and then another five lessons present themselves for you to work through again after that. So I think it's that, yeah, the fulfillment that you get from, oh, okay, because as anyone who has their own business will know, or even your parents will know as well, that 95%, even 99% of what you do goes unnoticed. It's the quiet toiling in the early hours, the late nights, right now as I'm recording this episode, it's a public holiday. Wade and Lexi are down at our friend's paddling pool. So, you know, it's the quiet day-to-day activities that actually lead up to greater success. So I think for me, that sense of personal recognition and fulfillment and that kind of, yeah, that little hat tip to myself, I think is a huge win for being in awards as well. So, but the thing is, when we do if we are associated with awards, whether it's we're finalists, we're shortlisted, or we are winners, it's that sense of, yeah, being, it's positioning. It's good for positioning. It really elevates your position in the eyes of clients, team members, media, people who may book you to do speaking, all that kind of thing. The very, very cool part of my awards journey over the years is that based on the fact that I think I won so many awards and the fact that I was such a vocal advocate for entrepreneurs to enter awards, and is I actually started to get asked to judge a lot of awards. So I got to be in a position where I was judging people's online entries for awards, but then also physically sitting in a room with a panel of other judges while people came in and presented to us for 30 minutes on why their idea or their business or their concept should win this award, which was just fascinating. And I absolutely love being part of that whole process. So I guess some of the tips that I wanted to share with you on getting some traction going with awards and starting to get involved and get shortlisted and hopefully win, which would be amazing, is first of all, I joke about this when I was speaking early on in my entrepreneurship career and I was talking about the wins that we had had as a business with awards. And I would joke that my biggest tip, you know, my biggest hot secret to winning awards is to enter them. And I always get to giggle when I say that, or when I say it even in a one-on-one mentoring session. But my point here is that so many people don't even try enter the awards because they've already made up their minds that they're not going to win them. So that's always been my thing, is even if I don't think I've got a snowball's chance in hell of winning or even being finalist for this award, it's still to put myself forward, because you just never, ever know. And having been on the other side of the coin, where I've been judging awards, I remember once I was asked to judge, it was an award for PR agencies. And I think it was like mid-sized PR agency of the year or something like that, that kind of category. And I'd said yes to the awards, and I was told that the first phase of the judging would be for me to go through a series of online entries and choose, I think it was 10 finalists at that point, and all the other judges were going to do the same. And what I actually did was I booked out like all day in my calendar, because I was like, oh my God, there's like hundreds of PR agencies in Australia. There's going to be so many people in this. I think it was one of my early judging gigs. I wanted to be very, very thorough and give them all, you know, lots of love. So I booked out an entire day in my calendar to do the judging process. And I logged in on the day that I kind of allocated to do my judging. I logged in and I think there was like 24 entries, and that was it. And that's, I mean, remember, that's entries, not finalists. That's entries. That's literally the total amount of people who had entered into this category for mid-sized PR agency of the year in Australia. So my whole point here is that you have absolutely no idea how many entries are going to be in there already. You have absolutely no idea what the judges are looking for. You just don't know. So it's the whole thing, you need to be in it to win it. If you're not in there, then there's no way in hell you're going to be winning that award. So that's a really, really, really key point on awards. If there's only one point I want you to take away when I'm talking about this topic of awards, it's that you need to be in it to win it. And I only recently had a mentoring call with Jackie, who's one of my all-stars. She's in my all-stars mastermind, which is my mentoring mastermind. And she's an incredibly smart businesswoman, and she has a business that's a virtual CMO services. So she essentially, she's like a marketing gun for hire, where her and her team become the virtual CMO, chief marketing officer of a business. And she entered, I think it was the Australian Marketing Awards, AMAs, and she entered the category, which was the best CMO category. And she, of course, went through the whole thought of, well, is this not for like actual CMOs, like people who are employed by a business as a CMO? And she said, yeah, but it doesn't say anything about in the criteria the fact that they need to be employed as like their job title, and yet that they've got a job as a CMO essentially. So she put together her entry and submitted it, and she's a finalist for the award. And she could so easily have talked herself out of the fact that, oh well, I'm a virtual CMO, I don't actually have one business that I work within, I'm not paid by the business. So she could have talked herself out of doing that awards entry. She didn't. She went for it, and she's a finalist for the award. I think actually as this podcast episode goes out, she will know whether or not she's won that award. So what I'm saying here is that you just have no idea what it is that people are looking for. The second thing I would say, and this is very much, I guess, from my own trying this, and also from me judging, it's not to be afraid to share your story. So I think some of the most painful awards entries that I've had to judge as a judge is, you know, they're the entries that people are very clinical about. It's all very stats led, which is, of course, there's a place for all of that. You want to be very kind of clear with the data around like how can you support the claims that you're making. But I find that when someone actually injects some personality into it, they share some of their story, maybe a bit about the personal motivations for them doing whatever it is they're doing as part of this awards entry, that really goes a long way. Because remembering that judges, it's just like any person, they want to connect with another person. So a little bit of, personal connection, some personal magic, I think makes a huge difference in an awards entry. And the other thing as well that I would say is to get references. So for quite a few awards, they're going to ask you to submit references or testimonials from whether it's clients or employers or colleagues or peers or whatever it might be. And something that I try to do with awards entries is to actually include references. And I don't mean like beautifully typed 1,000-word references on Word document signed and everything. It's just a couple of lines from someone who's part of my business. So even if the awards entry doesn't ask for references, to share them anyway, because it never hurts, particularly given if you're listening and you follow DISC behavior profiling, you'll know that 49% of the population are S's, and S's actually need the validation or a second opinion from someone else in order to make a decision in a certain direction. So that's why I like to just get a couple of lines from people within my business, whether it's colleagues or clients. It really makes a big difference, I think, in more broadly telling your story, but also remembering like it can feel very alien to talk yourself up, particularly in an awards entry. So I think it really helps when you can get someone else to say the nice things for you. It just means that, yeah, you feel like you're being less of a wanker, I guess is probably a very inelegant way to say it. So in terms of finding awards to enter, I find local councils are a really good place to start. And I know a lot of my mentees and people in my community have started with community, with council awards. And you'll also probably find if you're a woman in business, there's a lot of awards for female entrepreneurs within your industry. So I know for me, the kind of marketing, advertising, content, PR, digital industry was a really great place for me to start to learn more about awards and start to enter. So yeah, your industry, trade industry, I think is a really good place to look as well. As well, of course, quite a few media titles will host awards. So I know I've been a finalist a couple of times for the Women's Agenda, Women in Leadership Awards. A lot of the awards that I was part of in the Remarkables Group days were with marketing trade titles who would win. They would create awards as part of their business model. So yeah, it's about kind of going on a bit of a truffle hunt, like sniffing out what awards are happening. And also just another tip that I should share on that as well is just give yourself plenty of time to pull together the awards. And I mean, the very pinnacle in terms of time demanding awards is the Telstra Business Awards, because I know for me, when I entered the Telstra Business Awards, God, when was that? 2015? It took me a full week, like literally a full week. And I had gone in, thankfully I'd gone in 6 weeks before the entry was due and gone through the criteria and figured out like, holy God, this is a huge thing. So I just chipped away at it week by week. I actually had a timeline to work through it. So when it got to, I think the awards entries closed on a Monday and it got to Friday and I'd pretty much just been building my war chest of everything that this awards needed. And I was ready to go, whereas a couple of my friends left it to the last minute and then they spent literally all weekend, and now I'm talking all-nighters, trying to get ready for those awards. And interestingly, I was finalist, our business was finalist, but my friends weren't. So it's not to say they didn't have amazing businesses, but I think it would only help your entry if you give yourself adequate time to actually prepare it and get it out there. And the other thing as well is with awards, if they do need you to get testimonials from other people or references, just remember that's going to take time for you to ask them, you don't ask them for that on the same day. I mean, that's not ideal. If you're looking for a good testimonial, that's not a great way to get one. So yeah, just remembering that there's other stakeholders, like people that you need to actually ask for help with this. Is also, if grammar isn't your strong point or you don't feel like you're an especially strong writer, if you want to build in some time for someone that you trust in terms of the writing side of things to look over it for you, just thinking about all the different elements of it. It doesn't just happen in 24 hours. And there's probably going to be an element of, yeah, being intentional and organized about getting ready for that awards entry. Okay, so I want to touch on awards. The other thing I want to talk about as well is to have an opinion. And what I mean by this is essentially putting yourself out there in content, whether that's through a podcast, it's social media, it's email, EDMs, if it's speaking, if it's opinion pieces, whether it's, you know, you being a guest blogger on other people's blogs. There's lots of different ways that you can actually get your opinion out there. And I think the thing that I really wanted to flag is that you just never know who's listening. So, it's not necessarily about getting lots of likes and comments and eyeballs on your content. I mean, that's all also, of course, great. But it's really about creating a platform that people start to associate with you with that platform. So if I give you an example from kind of my two different lives as an entrepreneur, my first life as an entrepreneur, I was very much known for influencer marketing. That was the thing that I talked about day in, day out. And whereas I think in the second business, which is the kind of brand Lorraine, it's really about that kind of practical getting shit done, getting organized, goal setting. I think that's what I'm known for now. So, and that's the thing, that doesn't just happen overnight. We don't just say, okay, well, this is what I like to talk about, whether it's vegan eating or it's traveling on a shoestring. Like, that's not stuff that people just by osmosis will start to associate with us. We need to actively get out there and put that content out there so people start to build that association with, oh yeah, you know, John's the person who talks about this, or Sarah's the person who talks about this. So, and yeah, as I said, that doesn't just happen by accident. There needs to be consistency, intentionality, and yeah, just staying kind of on task with what it is that you're talking about and what you want to be known for. And I think the other thing I just really wanted to think about as well with this is it's, as I said, the likes, the comments, the eyeballs, that's all awesome. And of course, you're never going to say no to that. But I think the kind of broader thing is to think about you just never know who's listening or reading that particular article, that it kind of goes away into the filing cabinet of the brain. And then 6 months later, when they're thinking about an event that they're arranging for the team and they want a speaker, that could be you. Or it's a publisher who is thinking about, you know, what kind of books they want to publish next year, and they remember that article that you put out there on their friend's blog. You just don't know who's listening. So I think it can be quite demotivating. I know I've experienced this myself, where, I mean, I feel like so much of my business is creating content, and it can feel sometimes with, you know, if something doesn't hit the mark or you don't get any replies to, I mean, my love letter, which I send out every second Thursday, if I don't get any replies on a particular week, it's like, oh, it can be quite deflating. So I think just remembering that this is a long-term plan. It's not just a short-term, get some comments and move on. I almost see it as like we're building an asset that we want to be able to draw down on for years to come. And the other thing as well that I wanted to say is, while it's about us having an opinion and putting ourselves out there and whatever kind of channel we want to do that, it's more about also treating it as a listening exercise, as a dialogue. And something I did, and I didn't even realize I was doing it, to be honest, initially, when my first book, Remarkability, came out in 2016, and people would very generously say, oh my God, I love your book, I've read it twice, or really nice things that people would say, I would always say to them, that's so great, thank you so much for buying it, and what was your favorite chapter? And then they would tell me what their favorite chapter was. And the reason I love to do that is that it just started to give me more information on what it was they were interested in, like what's resonating, because I could do, I mean, there's 12 episodes in this season of the podcast. And I don't know, this one could be the biggest one. It could be an interview that's coming up in a couple of weeks. You just don't know. And it's incredibly helpful to listen to your audience and to be checking in with them regularly on like, what are you liking? And it's really lovely when people do say nice things about our work, whether it's something we wrote or when we had it in our businesses or our careers. So it's really, really nice to get that. And I think it's just really helpful if we can just take people one step further and just say, oh my God, that's so great, I'm so happy you enjoyed it, like, why did you like it so much? So if anyone has kind of had many interactions with me, you will know that I ask a lot of questions. And one of the questions I really do like to ask is, okay, that's amazing, I'm so glad you like my book or my podcast episode or that masterclass I did last weekend, like, why? why? And I was mentoring Hannah, who's one of my long-time mentees recently. And I was saying this exact thing to her. It's around like, if you're doing an event and people say, yeah, it was great, like, okay, why? Constantly be asking why, because I almost see it like a trail of breadcrumbs, you know, that's actually going to get you closer and closer to ultimately what content and what opinions you're putting out there that are going to serve other people the most. So yeah, always asking, treating it as a dialogue. It's not just about putting your stuff out there. It's about also getting feedback from people on what do they enjoy and why and so on as well. Okay, the next thing I want to talk about is to get comfortable speaking. So I don't mean speaking to your best mate. I mean speaking in the inverted commas professional sense. So getting comfortable being at the front of a room talking, presenting. Of course, we've got a lot of virtual events right now, like presenting virtually. So getting comfortable speaking. And I know this might sound like a really, really tall order for some of you listening. If you're anything like me, I was an absolutely terrified public speaker relatively quite late in my career, I think. So I was the kind of person that if you're sitting at the table in a meeting and there's some people who don't know each other, and then whoever's facilitating the meeting says, okay, it would be great to walk, or let's move around, let's go from, what am I saying? Go around the table and ask everyone to share what business they're from and what they're here to focus on today, or whatever icebreaker it might be. And I would literally have sweaty palms. I would be blushing. I would feel sweaty. I would feel like my heart was racing, just like all the signs of like intense nerves I would have. And if I saw someone speaking at an event, I would just be so like impressed at their confidence that they could confidently get up there and do that. It just blew my mind. And when I started my business then, I had absolutely no intentions of doing any speaking purely because I was just too afraid to do it. I had so much negative shit in my head about it. And I was going through at the time a program with the Entourage, and Jack DeLosa said to me, look, we're doing this roadshow in a couple of months' time. I don't think it was a couple of months. It might have been like 6 weeks. I can't remember. And we would love for you to speak at it. And I immediately said yes. And then as soon as I said yes, I said, okay, what does this mean? Now tell me what I need to do. So he explained, we're going to be traveling to 5 different cities over 10 days. And you're going to, so I'm going to speak in the morning, and Peter Lakovich is going to speak as well, who's their head of education. And then you're going to get up in the afternoon for 3 hours, and you're going to talk about, like, yeah, kind of almost like tales from the front line of your experience of being an entrepreneur. And at that point, we happily had quite a bit of success already with the Remarkables group. So the whole idea that I would get up there and talk about what was helping me in my business, and almost like distilling my biggest learnings for the lovely people in the audience. So I immediately cacked myself. I was like, oh my God, how am I going to do this? It was going to be 3 hours, on stage with pretty much no notes. It was just going to be me, no one up there with me co-presenting. And so, yeah, I kind of went all in for my first kind of speaking commitment. I was like, okay, cool. And you know, this is the thing as well. I'll touch on this further down the path in this episode as well. You know, with this, it's a lot of it is just saying yes before you're ready, before you feel comfortable. And honestly, it's one of the best decisions that I ever made, was to say yes to Jack on that, what at the time felt like an absolutely impossible ask, that I would be able to get up there and speak in front of groups of, I think the biggest group was maybe 200 people, smallest was maybe 40 or 50. And traveling and running my business at the same time. So yeah, I said yes. And I'm so, so glad I did, because Jack and Peter spent quite a bit of time with me over the following few weeks training me. And even I remember the first event that we did was in Brisbane, and I'd spoken for the 3 hours. I was quite proud of myself. Like, I was just, to be honest, I was just happy I'd just done it. And then when I did have really good feedback, and there's still people who follow me now who mention that they'd see me speak all those years ago on that particular roadshow. Speaking tour. So I think the really great thing was just that person, like Jack and Peter, who put so much time and energy into me. And I remember that first night in Brisbane, Jack called me and said, can you come up to my hotel room? And he had actually filmed my talk. He filmed, I think, the first 30 minutes of my talk on his phone. And we watched it almost like, kind of felt like he was my basketball coach. We did a post-game analysis watching me speak as well, which was just, I can't even tell you how cringeworthy that was. But he gave me some really great tips, which meant then we went to Melbourne next. And I felt like after Melbourne, I was on a high. I was like, yes, I did that. And we went out for an amazing Italian meal afterwards and had red wine. And I was just so proud of myself. So that was my, I guess, my experience of getting started in speaking. And I think the important thing to remember is that if and one thing I would love for you to take away from this episode is that if I can learn to public speak confidently, you 100% can as well, because I was so nervous. And for me now, speaking, I mean, I'm really missing it during this, 2020. I think I did 4 speaking gigs in February, and then I haven't done an in-person speaking gig since then. So I really, really miss that, being in a room with people. It's just electric. I love it. It's one of the times I feel most alive in a business sense is when I'm on stage speaking. And I've had some incredible experiences as a speaker. I mean, a lot of those, actually, funnily enough, were Business Chicks. Business Chicks flew me to Uluru back in 2015, I think. So I got to, go to the desert and have dinner under the stars and connect with incredible women. And this is the thing with this, I talked about this idea that we're in this for the long-term game here. It's not about a short burn. And I just had someone in the last 2 months reach out to me. I didn't know her name. I wasn't connected with her. And she had been in the audience of that group in Uluru, and she wanted me to mentor her. So straight away, she was like, yeah, I'm committed, and invested the money straight away. So I think that's the thing to remember as well, is you just don't know when people are going to pop up again in your future, and just how memorable you can be to people as well, that they will actually remember you for years to come. And you're almost like you're on their mental Rolodex for an opportunity to work with you in future as well. So I know I've seen that dozens and dozens of times by now in my business. So Getting comfortable speaking. And I really think, this might sound really stupid, but I think Instagram stories are such a great way to get comfortable with yourself. And I know for me, the more comfortable I get on Instagram and talking, and talking not perfectly, you know, where you don't have your makeup done, or you stumble over your words, or just getting comfortable seeing yourself, hearing your own voice. I mean, it just blows my mind how many people cannot bear the sound of their own voice. And I actually think that's concerning, because I think it's almost like a rejection of self in a really weird way. So I think just getting used to seeing yourself speaking, getting used to hearing yourself speaking, starting to think about what are the topics that you're passionate and you want to speak about. I think, getting comfortable speaking has been, one of the biggest. I mean, speaking and awards, I reckon, have been the biggest levers, if I want to call it that, in terms of me building a profile of my own. So yes, if I can do it, you can. Just some tips as well that have really helped me, and this is probably a whole separate podcast episode around public speaking. And if you do want more like this, just let me know. But something that I really love to do is I've got an anchoring move. So I'm talking about neuro-linguistic programming, NLP. And I've got a certain move that I do. I'm doing it right now. So I have both hands in a fist and I punch there. It's just like a yes. You can probably visualize what I'm doing. So it's like, yes, yes. So I do that right before I get on stage. And even before I present, if I'm now doing like virtual workshops, I'll do that beforehand. And it just gets me really in the zone. And it's a Tony Robbins thing that I learned many years ago. So I think making my move, the other thing I do is I get my energy really high. So if you ever see me before I got on stage at an in-person event, I'm in the ladies and I'm jumping around the bathroom, like just getting my energy really high, my vibration really high. That really, really helps me as well. The other thing that's really helped me, and this is Sarah Wilson taught me this years and years and years ago, is the whole idea of when we are nervous, it's the very same physiological feeling as when we're excited. So, I mean, I haven't gotten nervous before speaking for quite a while, but the last time was I was the MC for the Entourage's Digital Summit, which was called Reboot back in August. And I was really nervous about that. I was totally fine when Jack asked me. I was like, yeah, cool, it's fine, easy, you know, comfort zone, tick, tick, tick. And then when I actually went in, I wasn't even going to go to the rehearsal because I thought, I'll be fine. Just tell me what I need to do. And I actually decided to go into the rehearsal on Monday. Wade brought me in the back of the motorbike in Sydney. And I walked in and I was so intimidated by the tech. Like, there was so many cameras. There was a crew of, Jesus, what was there, including the Entourage team? Probably 10 people, 10 to 12 people in the crew. And also it was virtual. I was just, I was really nervous. And the next morning when I kind of went in blow dried, ready to go, I just kept telling myself, I'm not nervous, I'm excited. I'm not nervous, I'm excited. I'm not nervous, I'm excited. And I found that tool to be incredibly helpful in terms of overcoming nerves, not just for speaking, but for various other things as well. Something else that, these are both actually Jack tips. It's funny how you just remember this stuff, and this is, Jesus, 7 years ago that he taught me this stuff. Something else that really helped me as well is Jack talked about when you're organized, like when you're planning your talk, and sorry to any fellow anxious flyers like me in this one, but he said, you know, most planes don't crash in the middle of a flight. Most planes crash either on takeoff or on landing. So it's very similar for a talk. You want to make sure your takeoff is really strong. You want to make sure your landing is really strong. And almost like, emphasize your time and focus and energy on those two parts of your talk. Because if you think about it, if you got a strong takeoff, like a strong intro, people are going to be really engaged and motivated and connected with what you're saying. And then if you've got a strong end as well, or close to your talk, it means that you're going to be leaving people on a high. And that's kind of going to be the most recent taste in their mouth is whatever you ended on as well. So I really like that idea. It's something I teach a lot of my mentees as well. Now the other thing, and this, as I said, there's another Jack tip, which I have used and actually haven't needed to use, which is a good thing. When I first got on stage in Brisbane that time, and I knew I was going to be on stage for 3 hours and I was cacking myself. something I did is I had all my notes. I had my notes in two different formats. I had them in like long form, like typed up in Word document, printed out with kind of the topic, I would say like the headline, and then the 3 points I was going to talk underneath that with every single story, stat, everything was in detail on those pages. And then the other thing I had then is I almost had like summarized notes, which was just the topic headings. So almost like a bit of a map for myself of my talk. And I had both of those spread out on a table when I got up on stage. So that's what I did. And then what I said to people was, look, everyone, I've got my notes here. And rather than me saying they're here because I'm afraid I'm going to forget what I want to say to you because I'm so nervous, rather than saying that, I've got my notes here. I have so much I want to take you through in this talk that I've got my notes here, and I'm just going to be referring to them just to make sure that I've remembered, you know, I'm ticking off. I'm not forgetting any of the really important information that I want to share with you. So I really like that reframe because it kind of gives you permission to have your notes on stage, or if you're presenting on Zoom, you know, you've got them on Zoom. And it's, yeah, you reframe it because essentially it's the same thing. Like you do want to make sure you don't miss anything, but it's not coming from a place of nerves. It's coming from a place of you just want to create something really amazing for this audience who are giving you their time and listening to your talk. So that really helped me as well. And the other thing as well is I've seen this quite a few times with people when they're starting to speak, and sadly some people never move beyond this, but that whole thing of like they get up and they speak and it's like they're a different person. It's like you're chatting to them backstage, they're totally normal, and then they get up on stage and they become like really wooden or like super 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 animated, which they wouldn't normally be in real life. So I think what I really love the idea, and again this is another, I feel like Jack's probably by osmosis helped me write this whole episode. It's that whole idea of it's just you amplified. You're not getting on stage to be like the speaker version of you or the expert version of you or thought leader version of you. You're just getting up to be you, but just slightly amplified with higher energy. And that's it. And I know for me, I find that idea really freeing because I'm not getting up there trying to, you know, be someone I'm not. It's just like, I'm just getting up there and I'm just going to be an amplified version of myself. And when that dropped for me, like when I really took that idea on and started to live and breathe it when I was speaking, everything changed for me because there was just less pressure. I just got to get up there and be myself. And I found my interaction with the audience was so much better then as well, because I was just being myself. It wasn't like I was trying to play a certain role. And then while playing that role, trying to connect with the audience, like it was just a lot more authentic. Because like I took out the middlewoman, which was the kind of speaker, inverted commas, version of myself. So there are some ideas around speaking. Now, I really want to talk to you at this point about the snowball concept, because Jack, as I said, asked me to speak at that when I did that national tour with the Entourage back in 2013. But before that, before I'd even started the business, I was asked, because I was getting very interested in back then we call them bloggers, now we call them influencers. So in my former role, the role that I left to start my first business or markups group from, I was actually asked to speak. It was a group of bloggers were putting together an event on, I think it was influencer marketing or social media, born broadly, I can't remember. And they asked me to sit on a panel, and I was on a panel with a couple of our influencers. And someone else, can't remember the other person, there's four of us in the panel. Anyway, I remember like being so nervous because I just didn't know who I was, didn't know what I was talking about. There was a group, maybe probably like 100 people, 150 people in the room. And I'm pretty sure like if I watched that panel back now, I would probably just like die of mortification because I was probably so crap. But that said, even up until a year ago, someone mentioned to me that they had first seen me speak at that event and they really enjoyed it. So yeah, this is my whole point, and you just don't know who's watching, who's tuning in or who's in the room and where that might go in future. So when I talk about the snowball, what I mean by that is from that panel then, I got asked to speak at, well, Jack obviously asked me to speak when I started the business. But then there was an industry panel that I was asked to moderate a panel for. Then I was asked to do a keynote. Like it's the whole snowball. Yeah, the snowball gets bigger and bigger as it rolls down the hill. But the key thing with, I mean, all of this profile building side of things, but especially with the speaking thing, it's like it can seem like a really small opportunity. It might be like a free event for your local council or your co-working space. But you need to be seen. Like you need to put yourself where opportunity can find you. So even if it is a small event, there's 12 people in the room, that can then spur you on to the next one and the next one and the next one. So yeah, I think just that whole idea of remembering the snowball when it comes to this profile building element, I think really helps because, yeah, I'll talk about that again in a second. And then if you do want to get some wins on the board, you're like, okay, I just want to start practicing because remember, this is all about practice, 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 practice. But you need to create some, I guess, platforms in order for you to practice. You could potentially co-host an event. So get together with someone else or a few other people and co-host an online event or a real life event. You can put yourself forward. for speaking opportunities. If you know, for example, that there's, I mean, for me, back in the early days of the Remarkables group, actually throughout the whole Remarkables group, there was a company called ProBlogger who would put on this massive annual conference. It was a 3-day conference that was like, if you were in the influencer marketing space, you had to be at that conference. It was like our annual institution. It was such a great event. And I would find that I knew I was going to that event before I even started my business. And then, so I knew that would be a very powerful event for me to be at. And then I started to put myself forward to speak. And I spoke a few times at ProBloggers. So yeah, putting yourself forward and also maybe hosting a free event of your own. Like I know Hannah, one of my mentees, just hosted a free masterclass recently for clients and potential clients and had brilliant success with that. So if the events aren't becoming clear to you that you can kind of go and piggyback on other people's events, maybe think about hosting your own, whether it's on your own or with other people. And I think the key thing here, everyone, of course, is just to practice. I don't actually like the term practice makes perfect. I like the term practice makes permanent. You know, getting practicing, growing, it starts to really solidify these skills in ourselves. So the last point that I want to talk about in terms of profile building is to nurture your community. And what I mean by this is that like when you can create, there's a very, very powerful article which talks about the first 100 followers. You know, those first 100 followers who follow you are the most pivotal people that will ever follow you, because they're the people who will give you feedback in the early days of your content. I mean, all the time, but especially in the early days. And they're the people who will introduce their friends, their family members to you. They're the people who will provide testimonials on your product or service. Those 100 people are, yeah, as I said, they're the most important followers you'll ever get. And we get so caught up in there. I want to hit 50,000 followers or 10,000 or 100,000 or 5,000. And really the most powerful people that you will ever, ever, ever have follow you are those first 100 people. So I think not getting caught up in that quantity game, the numbers game of X amount of followers, definitely not buying followers. I am vehemently anti buying followers. So it's not about the quantity and the numbers. It's about the quality of those first 100 followers and how much they can help your business. And of course, how you can help them. So thinking about that community, and that community might live on your email list. It might live on social media. It might live on the comments of if you're part of certain forums or Facebook groups. So there's for everyone, that community is going to be slightly different. For some people, it might be more offline, where it's like groups of their clients, for example, would be the community that they're nurturing, even if it's like a bricks and mortar business. So it's much better, I believe, to have 100 people who are going to each tell one friend about you and your business or what you're offering, than 100,000 people who tell absolutely no one. And again, this goes back to my point earlier about we're in this for the long-term gain. I don't believe that you just get in there and build a profile in 60 days and that's it, bang, done, tick, you're finished. We're in this for the long term. And I think how we nurture our communities is going to be so much more powerful if we constantly see that community as being a long-term play for you more than anything. So just some really simple ways that you can do that. I mean, first of all is replying to comments. It's a really obvious one. I know Kylie Camps, who's a friend of mine and an incredible influencer and businesswoman. And she was saying to me, I saw her in Byron earlier on this year because she came and spoke at my retreat for my mentees. And she was talking to the group about like how to build a profile and build a presence online. And she was saying that her personal trainer at the time was looking to grow their following. I don't know if it was a woman or a man. Anyway, so Kylie was checking out their Instagram profile and said, but look, you've got like 3 comments from 2 days ago that you haven't even bothered to reply to. So I think acknowledging our communities are there and responding to them, I think that's probably the most basic level of that nurturing of your community. The other thing is to really listen to them. So I'm a big fan of asking people what they think. So part of this podcast season was because I did some Insta polls to ask how many people had their own businesses. Were they planning on it? And it became quite clear that a lot of people did. Therefore, that's why I then created this podcast season. So I think it's a really good thing. I mean, I'd say at least once a week, I'm asking my community some kind of question about how I can serve them better. So I think being seen to ask and then be seen to act on what response you're getting, I think is a really, really powerful thing to do as well. The other thing as well is surprise and delight. I'm a big fan of surprising and delighting. And it's not to say that we send $300 bouquets to people willy-nilly, but it's more about just what are the small little thoughtful touches that you and your business can create for people. So a really simple way to do that is thank you cards. I've long been a fan of thank you cards and an advocate for us all sending a lot more thank you cards. That's a really, really simple way to surprise and delight your community. And as I said, that community could be students if you're a teacher. It could be and parents obviously as well. It could be your clients, your prospective clients. There's so many different ways that we can actually have communities, and those communities can be hundreds of thousands of people, or they can be five people. It totally varies. So I think thank you cards are a really easy way to do that. I have someone in my community, Kylie, who she's part of my love club, and she was admiring. I found these unicorn ice cube molds in Kmart, and myself and Lexi have been making these unicorn shaped gummies for the last few weeks. And Kylie DM'd me and said, where did you get them from? And I said, oh, I got them in Kmart. And she's in Melbourne, and she said, oh, okay, I must go in like when Kmart opens, because she couldn't get them online. If you order them online, basically it's they've got three or five different versions, and you can only, they're just going to send you whichever one they have in the store, which just makes absolutely no sense. So anyway, Danielle on my team, I passed it on to her. She picked up a few of these ice cube trays in her local Kmart, and we popped them in the post to Kylie. So, and Kylie was just so thrilled, because she'd actually asked her sister-in-law to get some in Sydney for her and post them down. Just little things like that you can do. Another one in my community, just tomorrow actually, is about to have a double mastectomy. She's a cancer survivor, an incredibly brave, positive, uplifting person. And I've arranged for her to get a little care package, just a couple of things to help her get well after her operation. So, you know, these things don't have to be super expensive. They don't have to be super time consuming, but they're the things that really, I don't want to say reward, because it's not about like puppy training, but I guess it just recognizes our community for, you know, how they are there for us, and they support us in our business. And I mean, I've done that for many, many years. I did quite a lot of surprise and delight with my clients in my previous business as well. So there's some ideas there around how you can nurture the community. Okay, I'm going to wrap up this episode. I could probably talk about this for an entire season, but I'm hoping these pointers have really hopefully lit a fire under your ass as to how you can start to build your profile, and hopefully make it more accessible to you as well. Whether you are an entrepreneur, an intrapreneur, an employee, a side hustler, stay-at-home parent, whatever you are. And just some kind of closing points that I wanted to share as well is, first of all, please remember that everyone has to start somewhere when it comes to this profile building. No baby is born unless you're like Beyonce and Jay-Z's kids. You know, babies generally aren't born with everyone knowing their name and who they are and what they stand for. So just remember that everyone has to start somewhere. Even that entrepreneur that you admire, or business owner, or whatever it is, person, I mean, they've had to work on their profile. They've had to put themselves out there, and they've also, remember, have had to be prepared to fail as well while they do that. So I really love the idea of not comparing your first chapter with someone else's 20th chapter. So whether, you know, you might be looking at me as someone who's published 3 books, or someone who's got 100 million downloads on their podcast, just remember that they and I had to start somewhere as well. So please don't let the pursuit of perfection and being afraid to look stupid as you get started, please don't let that put you off from actually getting started, because that's the most important thing. The other thing I wanted to say as well is, even if you don't get feedback, if you feel like you're consistently pumping out the content, you're just not getting any content, you know, any traction, first of all, of course, I would say check in with your audience and see, like, does it need to be tweaked or changed in some way? But secondly, just remember, I've got a beautiful, it's like a beautiful quote, but it's like really beautifully typeset. And it says, you will inspire people that you will never even meet. And I mean, I would say that to anyone who's got any kind of a community. If we do great things in our lives, and we're great humans and all that kind of great stuff, is that there's going to be someone who tells someone about us, and then we get to inspire someone that we've never even met. So I think that's really powerful. So when you're putting your stuff out there, just remember that even if you're not getting a massive response every time, like for me, sometimes my love letter will get 10, 20 replies, and sometimes it'll get none, 2 love letters in a row. And it just, you know, it just varies what I'm putting out there and what people are resonating with and how much time people have on that day and all of the things. So yeah, just don't lose faith. keep the faith, I guess is what I should be saying, and just trust that you are probably going to be helping someone out there. And the other thing, and this is the most powerful point that I would love for you to take away this whole episode, is to just put yourself forward. Women especially have a massive confidence gap. We'll only put up our hand for a job if we know that we can do 100% of the job, whereas a man will put up their hand for the job even if they feel they can only do 30% of the job. So please be mindful of that, as you've probably heard from my, you know, the few small anecdotes that I've shared as part of this episode. I won my first award before I was ready. I won, I got that speaking tour before I was even ready. So just remember that you don't need to be ready in order to say yes, and that it's okay to put yourself out there. And that whole idea, God, what's the quote? That there are people out there who are living exactly the life that you want to live because they chose to believe in themselves, and that's it. Yeah, people less qualified than you who are doing exactly what you want to do just because they believed in themselves, period. That's how it's a really good meme. I shared it on my Insta, I think, a couple of times. So yes, that confidence gap, you are never ever going to feel ready. If you're ready, it's probably too late. So please, as a personal favor to me, please, yeah, we need those bright, shiny women out there. And just remember, those bright, shiny women, we don't need perfect women out there, but we need bright, shiny women out there who are prepared to put themselves forward. And please don't let the pursuit of perfection stand in the way of you building the profile that you really want to build for yourself and all the associated benefits that, as I've talked about earlier on this episode, that there can be with that. So I hope those pointers have helped. As always, I would love to hear your feedback on this episode, speaking of nurturing community. And if you would like to know about business mentoring with me or kind of career mentoring with me, I'll pop a link in the show notes. You can also find out more about it on my website, which is lorrainemurphy.com.au. So I'm going to say goodbye until next week. And thank you so much, as always, for listening to this episode. It really does mean the world to know how many people listen to my episodes and who take the time to send me feedback as well, and reviews and all the lovely things that people do. So thank you so much for listening, and I'll chat to you again next week. Thank you for being part of this week's episode. It was remarkable to have you. I am always keen to hear your thoughts, questions, ideas, and suggestions for future topics for the podcast. So please get in touch on Instagram. My handle is @LorraineRemarks, and through my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au. If you're enjoying what I'm putting out here, please do rate, review, or subscribe to the podcast so more people can find out about it and we can build this special community. Or even better, do all three. Chat to you next week.